You're listening to the North Peace Roundtable Podcast, your weekly podcast about theology and the Christian life. Episode 138.
You looked it up first, didn't you?
And I wrote it on this paper because I was like,
as you went to say it, I was like, I wonder if he's going to remember.
I said, I know, I'm going to look it up and then immediately forget. Can you believe we've done this 138 times?
Yeah.
Feels like it.
Yeah.
I believe it. But yes, thanks for tuning in. My name is Andrew. With me, as always, is Corland.
Hello, hello.
And Cameron.
Good morning.
And
with you is sometimes, with us is sometimes.
Yes, he's alive. Yeah, he texted me. What did you text me? Like, no longer with us, ..
That's right.
Because you were listening or something. You're like,
and then you were like, every time.
Every time. That's every right. time. But yes, thanks for tuning in. If you're new to the podcast, we do this roughly every week and either answer questions people have or just topics that we kind of toss around. So we have two topics, both related to like ecclesiology, the church, which I like talking about. Some people listening would be like, this is so boring, but you should be excited about it because it's good. Corlin, why don't you introduce that? We're going to talk about church membership, but you were you were the one who asked. Was this a question that came to you, or is this just your own thoughts?
So the first question that we're going to talk about is to do with church membership. So basically, I just worded the question, what is church membership? Is it different now than in the early church? And why do churches do membership the way that we do now? I think the reason I asked it is because we're looking for questions. And I know that that's something that I've worked through in my own life. So then I thought, well, hey, if I've wondered some of these things, there's probably someone out there that's wondered these things. So I figured it was a good topic to bring to the table kind of thing. So it is my own questions, but
sure.
Yeah.
So church membership today is exactly as it was in the Bible. Next question.
Next question.
No, I'm just kidding. Well, like, why don't you kick us off then? So like, tell us about a bit of your wrestle through church membership. Like you are a member of our church, but I know even when we were talking about it, it was struggle's the wrong word. I don't think you were like, oh, having a crisis, but you just like, it was a struggle.
Yeah. Working through it. Right.
Yep.
I think for me, the wrestle comes from like, how's the best way to describe it? I wouldn't say that I'm somebody who always looks at like the church in Acts chapter 2 kind of thing and is like, we have to go back to exactly what they were doing. I think church membership is the one thing that I maybe would kind of steer towards that, because I think for me, a lot of my wrestle came down to like the semantics of what church membership is now compared to like...
Sure.
So I remember having conversations with you and Cameron both about like, okay, so what, why would I sign on as a member at the church here? And one of the points that you'd bring up was like, well, accountability, like it's so that, you know, if you fall into sin, then somebody in the church can approach you kind of thing. And I remember asking you guys, cause we were already pretty good friends at the time, being like, okay, but like, if I fell into sin now, you would leave me there? And you both were like, well, no, of course not. So I was like, so I'm a member. I'm somebody that you would do that with, right? Like if I'm already involved enough in the church that you would do that, then does that not, like, why does signing a paper need to happen there? So those kinds of questions started
arising. That's exactly what I told
me.
My wife. I'm like, why would we just live? Why don't we just live common law? Why do we have to get married?
Yeah.
Sorry, I'm trying to keep going.
I do remember, yeah, the other side of that coin being, of course, the accountability would still happen based on relationship, but the walking away is far more easier. Like the, and I think we see that far more often in church where people face that little bit of tension or accountability, and they're like, I got nothing here. And there's like just no skin in the game, no commitment, walk away and find another body that doesn't make me feel...
Yep.
Funny.
I think
it probably does happen more often than what people realize in a church.
Sure.
Right?
And I think we have a wrong view of membership today, because we have this view of like, oh, like become a member so you can vote on the budget. Like most people that I talk to or think that. I shouldn't say most people.
That is one of the things I was told by a lot of church members though.
Is, yeah. So
well,
hey,
like, do you ever want to vote on something that happens in church? You should be a member.
Yeah. So I think we, yeah. So that is an aspect. Sure, non-members don't vote on, not just budget, non-members don't vote on who their elders are. Non-members don't vote on who their pastors are.
Yeah.
They don't vote on a budget. If we would ever change, and then, like some people would say, I don't care about this, but if we ever change bylaws, which directly affect how we run things as a church, non-members don't get to vote on any of that. If we were, let's say all of a sudden we said, we're going to hire female pastors and we're going to have female elders. If you were a tender of this church and you strongly opposed that, you would have zero say in that because you're not a member. So
yeah,
there is an aspect where it's like, if you want to say in what goes on in the church, become a member. Also, there's certain like volunteer positions in the church that you have to be a member because they, I don't want to say they hold significant power. That's the wrong word, because I know people right away are like, oh, it's all about power. No, but they have, like, if you wanted to, hey, you know what? I'm going to head up the stewardship team or the missions team or any kind of.
It is technically kind of a position of
sure power, influence, and you have more authority than. You know, if someone was like, hey, I attend here, can I do that? We would say no, because you're not a member.
Yeah. Also, all we make it about church, but almost every societal collective group of people have an initiation of some degree, whether it's a sports club where you sign, hey, I'm a member of the club, I'm going to pay my annual fee. Hey, I'm going to have a job, I'm going to sign an employment contract, I'm going to commit to being a part of this organization. Almost everywhere we go in society, like Costco is a great example. Like almost everywhere we go in society, there's this rite of passage to be included and to have, especially in sports or organized nonprofits, like you have to commit to some degree.
Yeah,
it's very elementary in many circles, but it's almost like, and it's like from the dawn of man, like there's been evidence of belonging to, whether it's a tribe or, I mean, the Old Testament is a wonderful example of how do we signify ourselves as being a part of this group. Like there's some exchange that happens, and it's almost in every aspect of our society. So I'm not sure why in churches it's this big, like, oh, they're trying to get me, or they're trying to dupe me. I'm not sure why that exists.
Yeah. And I think even my viewpoint on it is changing a bit, because even for us, we're like, oh yeah, come to our membership meetings, anyone can come. And actually I've been kind of doing some reading and studying and going, I think, and again, I'm not proposing that we'd have to change all sorts of stuff but I actually think membership meetings should be for members, because again, you're like, well, why do I have to be a member? I can go to all the meetings that and then biblically, one of the things that we're supposed to do at membership meetings is deal with church discipline. And I don't think non-members should be a part of that, because it's like you have no skin in the game. So why should you be involved in these things? So I'll just give you an example. So at Creekside, our church plant, David's just kind of said like, we're going to have membership meetings for members.
Yeah.
And that's a decision that he can make, sure, whatever. But it was funny because he said the first fake AGM. So again, he says fake because they're not really like their own thing yet.
Yep.
But he's trying to get people into the... But he said it was after church on a Sunday, and he said, this AGM is for members only. If you're not a member, we love that you're here, but this is just not a meeting for you. And he had lots of people come to him afterwards and were like, wait, so why can't I come to the meeting? Well, you're not a member. Okay, well, how do I be a member? Because there was, membership had a certain privilege.
Yeah.
You are more invested in the life of this church, so this is for you, right? Yeah,
it's a really good point, because at some of our membership meetings in the past, we've updated based on church discipline. And that might be a bit of a knock on the individual we're lovingly holding accountable if we're quote-unquote airing that to folks who are not committed.
Yep.
To the church, that might be disrespectful.
Yeah, so I agree that some ways churches do church membership is very confusing, because it's like, be a member, it's really important, but a non-member can come to everything else that we ever do, you just don't vote on stuff. Where I think church membership is actually, that's why I use marriage as an example, because our society is very non-committal in everything, every aspect. I don't want to commit, I don't want to do things. And And again, this is not an episode about marriage, so I don't want to go too far down that because people could say it's not a piece of paper, blah, blah, blah. But there is a commitment to marriage that's different from we're just going to live together and be common law. There's a commitment where you're like, actually, I'm going to like sign this and I'm actually giving my whole self. And we don't do that in our society much because it's like, I just want to be non-committal. It's easier to do it. It's basically the same thing. And so I view church membership as like, yeah, I could attend a church and I can volunteer. And so what's the big deal? So I agree with you, Corlin, that I think in North America, we've kind of dumbed down membership a little bit.
Sure.
Where I think that it's actually meant to be like more of a commitment than we've made it, right? So, yeah. Like, I want to get to biblically because a lot of people are like, membership's not in the Bible. And I would disagree, but we'll get to that in a minute because I think the word church membership's not in the Bible, but I think the concepts are all there based on the different letters that we read. But I was going
including the signature?
I was going somewhere important, and then I just totally lost my train of thought. We've dumbed down church membership. It's in the Bible. Dang it, it's gone. Anyways. Oh, yeah, so like the covenant that we have, like here, sign this church covenant.
Yeah.
There's things in there that I wouldn't ask a non-member. There's in the church covenant, it says, I will financially support the church. Someone who's like, hey, I've been here for 6 months. I'm kind of coming. I wouldn't go up to them and say, hey, are you tithing? Are you
Yeah.
Because they're not a member. They haven't actually agreed that they're going to financially support the church. There's in the church covenant the idea that I'm going to serve. If a newcomer comes to the church, I don't have an expectation that they should serve. Like,
yeah.
We don't even know you, right?
Yeah.
In the church covenant, there's the I agree to go through the process of church discipline, which again, we talked about this. It's kind of this like gray area. If someone who just attended our church was caught in unrepentant sin, I don't know if I would be as quick to go through the process of church discipline from someone who was a member. Because again, and this could be right or wrong, but I'm like, this person has no skin in the game. I show up on Sundays. This is my home church. And yet I don't give, I don't serve, I don't do anything else in the church. I'd go, you're not a part of the church.
But that's the differentiation back to your earlier example that would separate the formal organizational church discipline from a friend relationship.
Sure.
Because I don't check the membership list if I'm in, you know, out with someone and we have to talk, we talk about something. Like I don't double check that they're a member because we're friends. So I think we'll get into the difference between.
Yeah.
Organizational church discipline from an elder pastor perspective versus accountability within just church.
But parents. I have gone to people who are not members and talked about their sin, but someone who's a member, I can hold up their church covenant and said, you agreed to this. You signed this saying you, and then when it comes, and we're going to talk about church discipline afterwards, but then church discipline then is saying, we're actually removing you from membership. You are not welcome to take the Lord's Supper anymore. You're not welcome to come to our church meetings anymore because you have broken this church covenant in your unrepentant sin. I could say all of those things to someone who's not a member.
Yeah.
But it just holds less weight because they're like, I'm leaving then. That way too, if someone who was a church member left and said, I'm going to go attend another church, I would call that other church and say, just so you know, this member is under church discipline and they're attending your church. And we would hope, again, churches are wonky. We would hope that church would then participate with us and not just being like, well, welcome here. You can serve. You can give. Yeah. And go, actually, ooh, you're under church discipline at the MB church? Well, like we got, you can't take, you know what I mean? Like, anyways, I see your brain twirling. What's up?
Yeah, I think there's elements of the way church membership is done nowadays that does make sense to me. Like even from a logistical standpoint, the idea of having a list of people who are allowed to vote on church happenings. I can't imagine if you had somebody come for one Sunday and you told them that we were planning to do something and you had to try and let everybody and anybody vote and anybody and anybody could come and talk and, you know, bring forward their points of disagreement. Like membership meetings are already long. I can't imagine. Mm-hmm. So like, logistically speaking, there's elements that absolutely make sense to me.
Did you know the AGMs before I got here used to be all day Saturday?
Oh no.
Oh.
So we even like the last one we had that was 2.5 hours. Someone came and was like, "Man, these meetings are so short compared to what we used to have to do." Anyways, continue.
I believe it. I think for me the like, and maybe this is just because I'm a part of a little bit like just that slightly younger generation. That maybe sees things slightly different. I think I am not in love with the idea of. For example, I was attending the church for quite a few years before I became a member. I was involved in the church in ministries, and I was involved in the church actively making relationships in which there was going to be men holding me accountable to sin kind of thing. Actively engaging myself in like the Conquer series, which is about accountability to sin kind of thing. And men directly and very, very firmly held me accountable to those things. And I wasn't a member yet. Mm-hmm. Right. I don't know. I guess in the context of the modern church, I find it interesting, not necessarily even to like create conflict on the idea, but like, I do find it interesting that like someone like my wife who has not agreed with everything that's happened in the church, same with me, same with probably anyone in the church, but has chosen to like wrestle through those things and continue to love the church, continue to serve, continue to give within the church, continue to care about what's happening and care for those in leadership and would respond if leadership came, that it's like, okay, hold on. Like,
so what's the holdup then of not being a member? If you're doing all of those things,
yeah.
What's the holdup of like, but I don't want to be a church member.
So I think that's for me anyways,
yeah, sure.
In my mind, that's where the definition or how you would explain what church membership is maybe a bit different in my understanding.
Sure.
And that would be that I would actually argue that my wife is a member of the church because she's actively engaged. She's actively participating. She's serving. She's giving. If church leadership came to her and was like, if she had fallen into unrepentant sin and church membership came, both her and I would hope and pray that we would respond in a way that is Christ-like and in a way where we would, or she would then repent, or like someone like her would repent. Mm-hmm. And that would be effective then. So to me, it's not a matter of like, well, she's not a member. To me, I'm like, but like in all of the things that we've described, other than voting on stuff and having signed that piece of paper, she is. Now, I know you use the like common law example kind of thing.
Cause again, and you can correct me, but I could say the same thing. I serve my wife.
Yeah.
I sacrifice for her. I take care of her.
Yeah.
We love each other. We live together. We raise our kids together. We just didn't sign the piece of paper. We're essentially married. So do you see like,
yeah, no, so I can
make the same argument, but like, and there are Christians who are like, yes, cause marriage is not a piece of paper. And I get that. But even, you know, we're told that like we live in countries, right? And we obey the laws of the land. Yep. And in, to be married in Canada, you do sign the piece
of
paper.
Not only that. So that's the part that I would say, and I've done membership meetings with a lot of folks who are asking about it. There is an element of consuming in the church body without helping it exist from a legal standpoint. Because in Canada, or especially British Columbia, we exist legally and we have exemptions and grants legally based on our membership number, not how many folks just show up. And so there is actually quite an interesting, and I think that was part of my biblical dig too, is that we fall under the laws of this country.
Yep.
And this province says to exist as a nonprofit, as a charity, as an entity in British Columbia, how many members do you have?
So,
and that is often based on a legal precedent of how much exemption you get. So then there's a really interesting element of, if you're doing all those things, you're actually helping the body exist by joining the through membership.
Yeah. So I guess like for me, something like that, I would say it's a fickle reason to sign a piece of paper because the government can take that away in an instant.
Sure. But if so, that's the only reason you're not signing it, it's kind of fickle on both ends.
It is. Right? It is. Yeah. I definitely see where you're coming from with that and understand the concepts of like,
sure,
like I said, there's logistical reasons why it makes sense to me, right?
Yeah.
It's a way that God has blessed the church in North America up until now, where you do get certain exemptions from different things if you can prove that you have that membership. So, like, I see both sides of the coin. I think, too, though, that even within, the church membership idea, I think... Honestly, a lot of it comes down to even how us as members interact with other members within the church often as being a thing for me where it's like, okay, but this isn't the standard that's put forward kind of thing.
I don't even have a member list though. Like I have no, like,
yeah, I do,
but I have no, like when I go,
is that something like
I'm on the elder board and I don't even like when I come to church on Sunday, like I don't,
oh baby, I'm holding up the member list right now. You know, ooh, you know it. Cause we pray through it for all our members and stuff like that. So, I mean, we have, we just added some new members, but we have 170 something members.
Yeah.
Those would be adults.
Yes.
And we have about five.
You have to be an adult to be a member?
No, but we would probably, have a conversation with someone, you know, like, so Lucy was baptized when she was 9.
Yeah.
And she came to the baptism and membership class, and she's not a member, but there's no age limit on it or whatever. Just like there's no age limit on baptism. It's a case by case basis. So like if a 12-year-old came to me and was like, I'm really interested in the, but again, I don't know even legal things. If you have to be an adult, I don't know about all those kind of things. But anyways, we have 170 something members and we have about 500 adults that attend. So less than half of our church would say, yeah, I'm a member, which is just an interesting perspective. But even so, it's funny, like Cam's perspective is amazing because he's just brain works different. I'm like, I don't care about the government.
And most don't.
But for me, even biblically, like, because I hear this often, like, we're all members of the church, right? We're all one body. And I don't need to be a member of a specific congregation. We're all just of the universal church. But actually, when you read the New Testament, almost exclusively, anytime the church is talked about, it's about a specific congregation.
Yep.
It's not about the universal church.
Yeah.
So when you say, like, I belong to the universal church, yep. Totally.
Yeah.
We're all one body.
Yeah.
But all almost exclusively every time Paul or Peter or John writes about the church, they're writing to a specific congregation in a specific city. And then, so I do think the way that we do membership today, sure, is probably different.
Yeah.
Just like the way we do a lot of things. The way we do our worship services and communion. It's all different.
Absolutely.
And I don't think that makes it right or wrong. But when the, so for instance, when like Peter writes to elders, hey, make sure you shepherd the flock that God's given you. Well, which flock? So me as a pastor here, do I have any authority over the Alliance Church members? Well, no, of course not.
Yeah.
Because they're not my flock. So even in the old, even in the New Testament days, Peter and Paul are writing, even in Acts 20, Paul meets with elders in a specific city and he says, hey, make sure you shepherd the flock as overseers.
Yeah.
But they weren't overseers of Rome. They were overseers of this specific body.
Yep.
And then there's lots of examples where the church is told, hey, submit to your elders, honor them, show respect to your elders. But there, it's not, well, which elders? Who am I supposed to?
Yeah.
So members here, do we submit to the Baptist elders? Well, no, but we're all one body. Well, yeah.
Yeah.
But biblically specific, I'll just read rather than say, but like Hebrews
13.
Yeah. Hebrews 13, 17, says, obey your leaders and submit to them, for they're keeping watch over your souls as those who will give an account. So, you know, the church receives a letter and they go, well, which leaders am I supposed to submit to? Well, the ones in your local church. That's the one. Now, did they have a membership list and did they keep records? And I don't know. Maybe.
Yeah.
We can't say yes or no. I have no idea. We're never told. And then like, yeah, First Peter, Peter writes to the elders. Hey, I exhort the elders among you. Shepherd the flock of God that is among you, exercising oversight, not in compulsion, you know, and all these things. Do it willingly and blah, blah, blah. So I'm not going to read them all, but there's, you know, 1 Corinthians 4, Philippians 3, 1 Thessalonians 5, 1 Timothy 5, Acts 20, 1 Peter 5, all of these examples where either elders are told, hey, take care of the flock that God's given you, which is a local church. And then local churches are told, hey, honor and submit to your elders. So I think we see like examples of, hey, I was a member of this church in Thessalonica or whatever, yeah. Right? But yeah. Again, did they have membership meetings where they voted on a budget? Probably not, but I don't know.
Yeah.
There was in Acts 6, there was clearly a list of widows that received food daily.
Yeah.
So there was some kind of organization where, okay, you're a part of this church. We're going to take, I don't think that meant that everywhere all widows were being taken care of. I think it was that local congregation that was helping.
Yeah.
So again, like it's like the Trinity, the word Trinity is not used in the Bible, but it's.
Yeah. And it's I would also, agree. I think the concept absolutely like,
sure.
I wouldn't say that in, I hope that I didn't communicate that I would say that in the New Testament that there's no concept of membership.
No, nope.
But
I think you're just kind of wrestling through how we do it.
It's also that wrestle today. Of I don't want to be told what to do to a degree because I struggle with that also because so much of church is not in the Bible, the way we conduct church. So
sure.
I think it's very fair that if an organizational church decided that we would like to know for a series of reasons, you know, starting from the most integral to the most fickle, who calls this church home? I think it's fair. And by doing that, we have, or the denomination has ascribed a series of tests, so to speak, where if you
sure.
do that, then this is your home. And so then this group of people, this 170 adults, commit to this body so that the other 300 can come and hear the gospel and experience church. But that is a really interesting investment. And not to say those other 300 don't invest.
Sure.
But they also have no, if I were to see them parked outside Alliance the next week, it would be like, okay. Maybe the MB wasn't somewhere where they felt at home. Like, it, but yeah, I guess one of those 170 from the list, we might ask like, what happened? So I don't think if we went back to scripture for the way church operates today, it'd be a short study.
Sure.
Yeah. And so then it's like, well, what if my elders just asked me to submit and obey by acknowledging whether I am going to financially contribute, whether I am going to be a member of the MB because this is how the MB believes. And I know that is a point sure. of contention for yeah. some folks.
Yep.
You know, I had a really interesting conversation with an individual around pacifism and part of our
it's love and non-resistance.
Love and non-resistance.
Don't say the dreaded P word.
Well, when I navigated for myself, it was the P word. But it was interesting because, you know, I have guns in my home. This person has guns in their home.
Get her done!
And as well as like probably 148 of the names on the list. But
I think all of our elders kill things.
But it's interesting because I said to the person, we're in your home right now. We're in your basement. If there was this at the door, would you grab your shotgun and run to the door? Or would you grab and look, or would you just run to the door and look outside and wow, I think there's a threat. I'm probably going to call the police. The way it was helpful and very integral to my own membership journey through the MB denomination is that my first response is not violence. My initial sure. out of the gate, innermost response is actually
peace.
Love and peace.
Yep.
Now, and he's like, you know, I'm not, you know, I'm going to defend my family. I'm like,
totally.
Honestly, man, I probably would too, but that is not even in the top 8 responses to that bang on the door. Like, I'm probably navigating a lot of things. I'm probably, you know, phoning the police. I'm probably saying, what's going on? Yeah, like, there's a lot of things before
violence.
I'm running out to commit violence. And I'm like, thank God, honestly, that we live in a country at the moment where there are people willing to defend from a militaristic standpoint.
Sure.
And we are blessed not to have had that struggle. Like, our church forefathers did not have that fortune. My own wife's cousins fled their country because in the last 2 years they were pointed at and said, you will kill or you will be imprisoned. And so one fled in a taxi cab trunk paid for by another family member to get out of the country. That was his choice, where after high school, he was mandated to go to the army. So there are people, we're blessed not to have to make those decisions in real time. But we almost, I think, spit on the reality of so many of our brothers and sisters around the world who actually have to stand on that and say, I don't want to kill, so I'm going to have to be smuggled out of my country and I may never see my mom again. Yeah. That's the reality for him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think another helpful thing about church membership is that...
Sorry, did that get a little
weird?
Yeah,
I was like, oh man, let's reel that back in. Hey. I'm just joking.
Real time.
But I think there's a few good reasons that I've had from people that they've decided not to become members. There were some people who they still attend, but they were in a cult and very abused by leadership. And they're just they're still wrestling with that. And there's this kind of like, because similar things were said, join us, sign the thing. And so they're just like, they're just from a place of like trauma and hurt. I'm like, yeah, I get that. I totally get that. Yeah. And there's just a mistrust, which will take time to rebuild, of anyone in a position of authority. And I'm like, yeah, I'm not going to fault you for that. You've had a terrible... Absolutely. There was a guy that attended here that he doesn't anymore that was baptized as a baby. One of our requirements for church membership is that you would believer's baptism. You have made a confession of faith. You've shown that publicly by being baptized. He was baptized as a baby. And for him, he said, I think that's enough. I don't think I have to be baptized as an adult. And there was some issues with that because I'm like, okay, really? Yeah. Tell me about your memory of your baptism. How significant was it for you? And he was like, well, I was a baby, so I didn't have any memory of it. Oh, interesting. So anyways, I was...
Tell me more.
he was a friend, so it was okay for me to joke with him. But he just said, well, if that's a requirement for membership, I'm not going to be a member because I don't agree with your stance on baptism. And I was like, okay, that's fine. I pray that your stance will change on baptism. But it wasn't like, get out of the church forever. Mm-hmm. It was like, okay, fine. And then there's been, I think I had the conversation with the same individual that if you disagree with our statement of faith on a certain point, and his thing was like, I don't want to just become a member and ignore my conviction. I'm like, okay, I think that's okay. Mm, right. Yeah. So I think there's maybe reasons for not just jumping in and actually thinking critically. And but I think part of membership is also really helpful for our elders, because less than half of the people who come to our church are members. And part of our things that we do at elders meetings is pray for our members. And there's lots of people who we just don't even know. How are we going to shepherd you and pray for you if you just like, I'm going to come in on Sunday and then I'm going to leave on Sunday. And again, I know that there is like, your wife is an exception, and there's others who are not members but are like, no, I'm all in, and that's awesome. But there's lots who are like, I'm just gonna come on Sunday, consume, and then leave. And then as elders, we're like, how do we shepherd people like that if they refuse to allow themselves to be held accountable? And then even like a simple thing like praying for our members, how are we going to pray for you if we don't even know who you are? So there's just practical things that are helpful to a church. But I agree with, I think both one of you said that how we do membership is probably not reflected in the New Testament because we just live 2,000 years later. And
the world is.
Yeah. So I don't know. Other thoughts on membership before we talk about
church discipline for 5 minutes before I have to go?
You have to go in 5 minutes? Oh, okay. We were going to church discipline you anyways.
Yeah, I know.
You got to leave now because you don't agree.
I have a hilarious story about that. What's the terminology? Excommunicate, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So that word gets thrown around a lot with church discipline, and I was excommunicated from a church, blah, 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 like that kind of terminology. Well, one time when Aaron and I were talking about it, for whatever reason, my mind, it got confused with exfoliated. And so then I was I got exfoliated from the church. And I thought about it. I was like, because she started laughing like crazy. And I was like, what? And then she told me and I realized what I did.
Exfoliated.
But not going to lie, if you sinned and then they brought you up to the front of the church and like gently exfoliated you in front of everyone, I probably wouldn't do it again.
Yeah, you'd repent.
This is pretty effective.
This is weird. Yeah. I repent just so that you'll stop. Well, yeah, I mean, if we want to end it here, that's okay, too.
Well, no, I think it's kind of fun, and we can just dance around it, but I've heard people say, like, I got excommunicated, or they stopped talking to me, and it's like, well, you're living in sin, and they're not going to join you. I mean,
yes.
Like,
yeah. Yeah.
Yep.
It's kind of funny, like,
I'm having an affair, why won't you invite me over
for
dinner?
Or they quit drinking, they stop coming around, they stop being our friends, because you're always at the bar, they don't want to go there. And so it is quite interesting because we've had friends who have gone into sin and it's like, you never call me anymore. It's like, I'm sorry, we have nothing to talk about. Yeah. Like, it's so awkward. And it's not excommunicated. Yeah. It's that we align ourselves and the people around us that are like-minded.
Yeah.
And if you're not, then I'm not going to be calling you up and hanging out.
Like, I think humans are designed in a way that we notice relational tensions though, right? So if you have relational tensions because of sin in your life, you'll notice it. And I think that oftentimes, as followers of Christ, we'd recognize that sin brings death to relationship. And no matter what that relationship is, whether it's with you and God, whether it's with you and your spouse, whether it's with you and your friends. But when you're stuck in sin, it's really easy to become disillusioned that you should be able to live in that sin and not have it affect anything.
Yep. Yeah. So The reason I thought about church discipline as a topic is because if you were here on Sunday, we kind of we talked about it, Ananias and Sapphira. That's church discipline. We're just gonna kill you. But then there was just
you mean God.
God, yeah, not us.
Ooh, the church was pacifist.
But there was just questions of like, so do we do that for like every sin? When does it become a church discipline case? Like, how do we go about doing this? So like, even the excommunication, the word literally means excommunioning. It's not shunning, like
not communicating with them.
Well, yeah, because even when it says like, don't even eat with someone like that. Most likely he's talking about communion, the Lord's Supper, which was an entire meal. Right. And it was like, you're not welcome to come and eat the Lord's Supper with us. So excommunication, I think sometimes and I see you at the grocery store, I'm going to shun you and not look at you. And no, like, there's someone that we had to do this with, and I saw them somewhere and I said, hello, hey, how's it going? And it's awkward, but I'm not going to be like, don't exist. No. But we try and follow the Matthew 18, and I mentioned it on Sunday. There's lots of sin that can just hopefully be dealt with one-on-one.
Yeah.
Because people come and, like, I know that my sister is sinning. Can you go talk to them? It's like, no. Have you talked to them?
Yeah.
If you've talked to them and then you and someone else went and talked to them and they still won't listen to you, then yes, the pastor and the elders of the church, we will get involved. But hopefully you can deal with it. Like, that's what Jesus says in Matthew 18. And then I think the other thing, what qualifies for church discipline, I think it's like, if it can be verified, because there's lots of like, I heard that they're like this.
Yeah.
Or let's say someone came and said, hey, Cam's really greedy. Well, how do you quantify that? There's certain sins that are sins of the heart that are very hard to quantify. Yeah. Like, yes, if all of a sudden we see evidence that Cam's being greedy, but just to say like, hey, Corland is lusting after people. Okay, well, do you have any evidence that that's true?
Yeah.
So I wouldn't do church discipline for sins of the heart that are very hard to quantify. I might have a conversation with you.
Yeah.
But it has to be.
Because I'm a member.
It has to be. Yeah. If you're not a member, I don't care about you.
Actually, most of it started in my experience over the last few years with people that would come to the elders board seeking direction, prayer, guidance.
Sure.
And then through a course of the relationship, they just say, it's almost like they throw up their hands and they just go another way. And then they're invited back. Like, that's actually not what you actually originally asked for.
Yeah.
And you're going down this road that's terrible.
Yeah.
I have not actually seen the last few years where it's just like a surprise to them. Like, they're brought in. It's like, I have no idea what's going to be talked about.
This is an intervention.
Yeah. It's actually more of a, we've been walking alongside you because you've actually come forward originally with a challenge or something in your life that has, through the course of accountability, created attention you're no longer comfortable with, and then you leave or you get angry, and then that causes a necessity for conversation. But it's not like a hot seat where someone's surprise, we caught you on camera.
So I think what I'm hearing you say, and that I think maybe didn't have time, at least not in the first service, to get into, is that church discipline is not necessarily for every single case of sin within the church. Because the idea would be that you would follow the Matthew 18 principle, where if you as a believer within a church body see someone sinning, and it's, like you said, verifiable, it's not just a gossip trail that's made its way to you, you know the person, and you would approach them and say, hey, like...
Also, I think one of the requirements is that it's unrepentant. Because as far as church discipline, conversations about sin, yes, totally. But as far as saying... we're actually removing your membership. You're not welcome to take the Lord's Supper here. And we're going to treat you like an unbeliever. That's what Matthew 18, that's the final step. We're going to assume that you're not a follower of Jesus. So the requirement for church discipline would be that you're unrepentant, that you are not showing any kind of measure of godly sorrow or repentance towards your sin. I think that's why Jesus says, go first, bring someone else. Because hopefully by step one and two, the person's like, yeah, you're right. Oh, my goodness. I need to repent of this. And obviously the church then would help that person.
Yeah.
But I think church discipline, where it's like that seriousness, is when someone's gone and, you know, so I go to Cam and Cam says, I don't care. I'm going to continue doing it. Then you and me go to Cam and Cam says, I don't care. Yeah. Then it's like, okay, well, they're unrepentant.
Yeah.
So then we have to like amp up the seriousness of it. So... You know, if you came and lied to me and I knew that you lied to me, I wouldn't run to the church elders and go, Corley lied to me. I would deal with it with you.
Yeah.
However, if it was a pattern of lying and it's like Corlin continues to lie and I've called him on it and he doesn't care.
Yeah.
Then I'm like, there's unrepentance there. So we got to deal with it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So but I've walked along with people who are living not in sin, but they're sinning and they're like, crying out to God, asking for freedom, and they're really struggling, and it could take 2 years, but there's always that threshold that you're monitoring, like, man, this person's like tormented by their sin. Yes. They're not like inviting it, and they're having a joyful time in their sin. And I think that takes a little bit of discernment to and I have even said with the person, like, if it comes a point where you don't, I'm like, I'm not interested in this relationship with you. Like, if I don't sense when we chat weekly that you're struggling. And struggle is good, too.
Yep.
If I ever feel like you're having fun in it, then I'm probably going to end the accountability relationship.
Yep.
Yeah.
More so from a time and...
sure.
That was just real talk right from the beginning. Like, I want to walk alongside you as long as it is repentant sin.
Yeah.
Well, let's end it there.
Subscribe to the church. Become a church member.
Yeah. Make sure you smash that follow button by signing that. That's what I'm going to call signing the church covenant. Make sure you smash that like button. But if you have other questions, always feel free to reach out if you're a member, and then we'll listen. You know what? I shouldn't joke.
That was a joke.
I know, because someone is going to come, Andrew only cares about members. And I always love those kind of conversations. No, it's a joke. I'm trying to be funny. Anyways, thanks for listening. Episode 138. We'll talk to you guys next time.